Don DeBrass Stocks, good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Yes, how are you doing?
Going back to the issue of the NIS that was discussed earlier in the program, as far as I'm aware, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it is the law which requires every employer upon hiring someone to include in the documents the NIS number. And the employer is required by law to deduct from the wages the NIS contributions and remit them to the NIS. And he or she, the company, has to make their contributions as well.
Right. So what's the point?
It goes further. It goes further, which was not raised in the conversation earlier. The same goes for income tax. The same goes for income tax. So income tax and NIS are to be deducted and sent into the respective agencies.
What was the problem?
The problem
Nobody is disagreeing with that?
No, but the problem is that I think it was said that if someone is doing
side hustle.
Is moonlighting.
Yeah.
If you're moonlighting and the who you're doing moonlighting with, let's say, as somebody mentioned, pumping gas.
Right.
The gas station owner is also obligated to make those deductions or remit it. It is not a question that he's working off the books. That employee is subject to the same regulation.
It's not a reasonable point. The problem is that everybody doesn't pay income tax because everybody don't work for enough money to pay income tax.
No.
If you only pay me $250 a week, I don't pay income tax. I should pay national insurance, though.
It depends on whatever is the threshold for taxes.
Right, but the point, sir, is that if you pay me a dollar, I have to pay national insurance on it. However,
right.
I might not have to pay income tax on it.
Well, I'm just saying that I might be moonlighting and making enough money, which I'm under the threshold, to pay income tax as well as NIS.
Yeah. If that's the case, then all the more reason why the two should be registered. The gentleman was making a case that you should be allowed to register national insurance from two different employers.
But I don't think that should be so. I don't think the law permits that. That an individual should have more than one NIS number?
No. He's saying that if you can have one NIS number, then you should be able to have two employers contributing to it.
That's right. But you cannot have one individual with two
NIS
numbers.
He is suggesting,
which was suggesting that.
No,
sir, that's not what
he's suggesting. He's saying that basically people are only allowed one employer per number. So he's saying that if you have to have two numbers to have two employers, then so be it. But you should be able to have more than one employer.
Yeah, of course, you can have as many employers.
And I was saying to him that my understanding is that you can have a primary employer and you can have any number of secondary employers, but your primary employer is the only one that can pay the national insurance at one rate. All of the other rates are at the self-employed rate.
That is based on your earnings?
Self-employed rate.
Yes, right.
Right.
Or not only self-employed, but my understanding of what you were saying, self-employed means that I'm working for myself.
Right.
But if I'm working for employer A at a soda factory, then I go and pump gas. Those are two different employees,
right,
and both are required to make contributions to NIS.
Right, and if necessarily income tax too. But if you are working, employer A, you will be employed with them. Employer B, you would be self-employed. So then it would be up to you when you're filling your income tax return.
No, you're not self-employed.
You're working with some...
No, well, I think I have a problem with that.
Let's be clear on what you have a problem with. Because what Patrick was saying, sir, is that you should be able to have two primary employers. Right now, you can have a primary and a secondary. So are you saying that you agree with Patrick that you should be able to have two primary employers?
Whoever you will work with is required to pay...
Hold on. Let's be clear. As it stands now, you can have a primary employer and a secondary employer or several secondary employers.
Mm-hmm.
You pay national insurance at different rates because one is a self-employed rate and one is the rate for your primary employer. I got a sense that Patrick was saying that you should be able to have more than one primary employer that will contribute to national insurance at one rate.
No.
What exactly it is that you're saying?
My position is that for every person, every employer you work with, based on your earnings, you should make the contributions to NIS based on those earnings.
Sir, we've gone past that a long time. We agree on that. So we went past that. The point I am making is that there are different rates for primary and secondary employment. So what I'm asking you, do you support Patrick's argument that you should have it should be possible for you to have two primary employers, or do you believe that the current situation as it now stands, where you can have a primary and several secondary employers that pay national insurance at different rates, should apply?
You should pay the second issue that you mentioned there. Whoever you work for, in other words, more than one employer.
Let's try to get to an end of this discussion. The two arguments are, there are two national insurance rates, right? One which is for your primary employment and one which is for self-employment. And there are different rates.
Patrick is saying
that you should be able to have two primary employers that will take from you at the lower rate. Is this what you're saying, or do you believe that the current situation should now apply?
The difficulty I have is that the definition of self-employed. Self-employed can't be working for somebody else.
So then you believe that Patrick is right. Think that Patrick is right. Okay,
that's right. Self-employed means I work for myself, selling sweetie around the corner.
Well, my difficulty with that is that I have difficulty understanding how you can have several primary employers. Because if the idea is that the primary employment is the one that more or less directs you on a day-to-day basis, if you're pumping gas and you're running a side hustle, I don't really know that that's a primary employer. That's a secondary employer.
So
you're self-employed for all intents and purposes.
The term primary should be removed then for all employers.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. We're gonna see if we can get some other calls in. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. To Down to Brass Tacks. Somebody writes me a note and says, Peter, Amsterdam also has facilities for cocaine and heroin addicts to buy their drugs from government. Is this a model that yourself, a native self, is promoting? This guy or lady, whoever is responding, is pretty much at sea. The Dutch have a policy regarding drug use, which I like, and it says that they seldom ever prosecute the user after the trafficker. And I think that that is a policy that makes a lot of sense, because in many instances, to prosecute a user, you are prosecuting the person that has the least to gain from it and the most to lose. And you're not necessarily helping the situation. So the facilities of which you speak have nothing to do with cocaine. Cocaine, you can get that yourself. But the heroin situation is one where they have had considerable success by having facilities that allow people to use heroin in a sterile environment, as opposed to allowing these people to become nuisances and making nuisances of themselves. And that has been a program that has been largely successful, because the number of heroin addicts in Amsterdam now has fallen substantially. I mean, they have other problems, but the heroin thing is more or less a thing of the past. It makes a lot more sense for us to look at these things scientifically and try to understand the rationale than to just try and see if you can shoot me down, you know, because you feel that I'm too liberal and that kind of thing. But I know this caller well, and I know your angle. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning. Good
morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm good.
First lady for the morning. It's good to hear you.
Yeah, this is Lolita, Peter. Mm-hmm.
Okay, nice to hear you.
I consider you my little brother, because I'm older than you are. Yeah. I am just calling this morning. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace and goodwill towards men. Those words were declared by the angels at the birth of Jesus Christ, who is the Son of Glory and the King of Peace. The whole world was transfixed for over 2 weeks concerning the lives of those 12 boys and the coach. And we see today that they have been freed from the caves, and the whole world is rejoicing. Not only I want us to understand that we were praying, those who don't pray were hoping, but it was like one big ball of love. And it needs to continue, because the doctor and the nurse and even the divers, those who were supportive of the children, they're still to come out, right? Mm-hmm. So these prayers need to go up. What really thrilled my heart was seeing persons from all over the world, whatever religion, they were kneeling, they were sending up their prayers in whatever way. But as Paul said, the greatest, we can have everything, but if we don't have love, we have nothing. Right? Faith and hope and love was sent up to the Most High God, I say, to help the children. And do you know, I recognize that, let me say the children, but those persons on the ground, that if, no matter what we could do as human beings, which was greatly appreciated for the persons who was carrying out the mission, that if those rains had come in, if the heavens had opened up, lives might have been lost. So it is still the Most High God who kept the rains at bay. Some came, some rains came, and I mean, even the persons that are reporting, they're amazed that at this time of year there wasn't more rain the past 2 weeks.
So, ma'am, just tell me something. How does God decide when He's going to send the rain, and to whom? What's the process by which He decides when the rain is going to come and who is the rain, you know?
Listen to me, right?
Because you realize it was premature rain that got them stuck there in the first place. So why did God send that rain?
Premature rain?
Yeah.
The rain.
So you said that did God decide to hold off on sending back the rain? So I'm saying, but maybe if He had held off altogether, they would have been able to get out of the cave without this problem.
But you see, I see God as the maker of everything, right? So He can make the rain, He can hold it back. If they weren't trapped, we won't have this story. You see, every...
I know, but that's the point, ma'am. So then why do we have to have them trapped to get the story? If God was comfortable with them getting out, then why did He just let them get out, period, without, you know, having to have...
Nature. That is nature. God is controlling nature, though.
Right. But then if God is controlling nature, then just let the children get out one time without having to go through all of this trauma.
Well, you may not see God as I do. I don't. Right. But I express myself the way I see.
Which I allowed you to. And I mean, you were talking for a long time without my interrupting. But my point is that when we get to a stage where we start to say that God is exercising options, my question to you is, on what basis does God exercise these options?
Well,
what do I have to do to get an option exercised on my behalf?
Pardon?
What do I have to do to get an option exercised on my behalf?
You see how the world was praying on behalf of the children?
The world was praying on behalf of Dominica, too.
The
world was praying on behalf of Haiti. The world was praying on behalf of St. Martin.
Listen to me, right? Things will happen. Things will happen. God never said or promises that we wouldn't have trials and tribulations.
So then, ma'am, why does God have anything to do with it? What I'm saying is that if you want to call and say that, like me, you're happy that the kids got out alive, why can't we just say that? Why do we have to go down the road of saying that God held back the rain?
Listen to me. God held back the rain. God sent those persons that had faith and the love. What I want to say, though, is that has every now and then, right, things happen in this world that show us directly what is needed. That is what I want to end with. Mm. What is needed for us as human beings to live in peace on earth.
Which
is love. Okay. Right? Which...
We can agree on that.
We cannot exist without love. And who has made us? Who we call we? The Most High God. The one that has taken us out of our mother... Because of conception, we even as the Bible says, we grow in the darkness of the womb, we come out into the light of the world, and we are not separated from the one who has created us. I'm looking at the Creator God. I'm not looking at the God of money, the God of this, the God of that, the Creator that have made us, that have made you a very handsome man.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, ma'am, we're going to have to run. That's a good note on which to end, and I want to thank you so much. Somebody's asking me if your children in there were Christians. I don't know. I didn't pay too much attention to that part. But I do know that I'm happy that the children were saved. And I hope that the world has learned some important lessons from that exercise, namely how to deal with these kinds of disasters, but more importantly, how to avoid these kinds of disasters. And also that an international response is often important, you know, because we may not necessarily have the same tribe in terms of our own country arrangement, but we can still work together in pursuit of this type of thing. So that's my view. Down to brass tacks. Good
morning. Afternoon, Mr. Vicker.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty well. First, I was holding all along, but let me tell you, that lady was looking in another mirror. She wasn't seeing who she should see. Coleman, she said, what she said about you? That you were handsome?
She said I was handsome.
So, Peter, I call you. I took down a file out of the filing cabinet this morning to discuss a matter with you.
But Mark, I heard you were on a football show yesterday.
No.
I thought it was you because I heard reference to someone walking with assistance.
No, not yet. It wouldn't be me.
It wasn't you. Okay. But you're okay.
As a matter of fact, yeah. I'd like to be honest with you, I was in the accident and emergency yesterday on a matter.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
But I was good. I'll talk to you about that. But let me explain something to you, Peter. I listened to the talk. I'm going to put the file down for the time being. I listened to you on the talk of Ganja, right? Mm-hmm. If the position of this country be fair in terms of justice or be fair in the youth as well, then obvious, it would go down well. I can go back to tell you long before you went to secondary school, Peter. In this country, we saw privileged people who went before the court. Take, for example, a man went before the court in St. Philip, charged for riding a bicycle without a bell and without a light. I was given 7 days.
Are you serious?
Are you serious?
With a suspended sentence?
7 days by one of the most serious magistrates we've ever had in this country, and that is documented. Then another person who is very popular in this country, very, very popular, became very popular, went before the same magistrate, was found with the use of the substance and was given a CRD, convicted, reprimanded, the charge. Right? Now, another case of some juveniles from out in Strathclyde, and you know when you talk about Strathclyde, you talk about a Caucasian group of people. They went before the court, also by one of the top investigators in this country who is not in the island, and there were CRD as well. And the first time in the history of marijuana charges that I ever hear about a male plant and a female plant. And they were set free. While other people in this country were at least remanded, were sent up for a little spiff. And most of the times the police bring a case of a little blue bike, or a little pink bike, or the body drop away the bike and then pick it up. So the small man gets locked up for having a pink bike or blue bike with a spliff in it, while the big fella seems not to be able to even get remand. So I'm saying until the justice system is fair.
Is that fair?
That's what I'm saying. It's fair, right? You have a situation in this country where we are still waiting to find out what happened to that container that came out in port that nobody seemed to know exactly where it gone, if it gone to the moon or it disappeared. Nobody has been charged.
You're right. You know, so I mean, Mark, you're very right. That I think that our justice system is so unfair, and yeah, that's pretty much.
It's not fair. No, I assure you. Now let's come off of that. I just want to rest. I hope it'll be all right. I pick up a file, and it's dealing with the gold mine of Bay Street. Now we know that the West Coast has become very, very popular in terms of investors. I predict that within another couple of years, that Bay Street, between the junction of Beckers Road and probably the bridge, will become a gold mine in terms of investors. We're seeing it happening now as far as that stretch of beach is concerned. And I'm saying something that you may not know, but I'm going to inform you of it. First, I want to ask if the Minister of Maritime and also the Minister of Tourism are aware of the developments that were supposed to go. You know, Peter, and I know that there was supposed to be a marina and a transformation of that area from Beckers Road corner all the way down to the Pierhead. You're aware of that?
That's right, yeah. Mm.
You also know that the board members, some of the board members resigned, and it was supposed to be a matter of hearing before the justice system, which has never came about. I am asking now that there is an investor, a local investor, and I like what our prime minister said, as long as you're local, we're going to accommodate you. And if there's a war now going on between the junction there of Beckers Road all the way down to the bridge. The reason for this is that one of our former members of government, I understand, has bought an area in between there. And he's supposed to be putting down what, but now what I know is an aqua park. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. But I also know that five years ago, an individual was attempting and has gone through the whole process of putting down an aqua park abandoned just on the outside of the Great Wall and has been turned around down to the ousting of the former government. Mm. My question is that if this person will now be given permission to set down the water park at Bay Street, what is wrong with fairness in business? That's why the fair trading is there. Fairness in business goes for all. That if that person has been given to open, which was Carlisle Bay Park, with a water park, I am saying that the person who 5 years ago went through all the systems, coastal service, everything, should be given the right to put down his water park. Do you agree with me?
I agree with you.
Right. Yeah. And not only that, it's estimated that he will employ almost 50, 60 people in that extreme. It must be seen as fair. So when we talk about the justice system, we also have to talk about fairness that did not take place in the former regime. Because the former regime, as far as I understand, the situation at Brandon's was held up because of a particular minister who did not see it possible, because this water park was going to clash with beaches. Mm. And this water park was likely to clash with the water base. So all I'm asking, that the minister responsible for maritime, that the minister of tourism and those people involved now get to the fight, now start to work on what is going on with these investments as far as the Brandon's water park and as far as the Bay Street water park. And Mr. Wickham, you understand what I'm saying. We want the investors,
okay,
wrong or right. Whether they're white, whether they're blue, whether they're black, whether they're foreign or not, they have to comply by the laws of Barbados. And I do not believe that it is fair that one person should be held a bear.
That's no problem. Yeah.
Right. So we got that file off. That. So you agree with me on both instances that there have to be some fairness in terms of the guards of smoking in Barbados?
I agree. I think that we agree on both instances.
Let me give you another one, though.
All right. You got to give me quickly, though, because we're on 52, right, and Dennis likes to take us out early. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Every week is more minutes he teething from me.
Beautiful, my little Rick. I want to walk up on you.
You like it?
All you have to do is understand what Rick is saying. Don't go and walk up on people. If I don't exactly the person, can come and walk up on you before you go and walk up on the person.
So you can express a desire, but you don't act on the desire unless you know that there's a mutual interest in walking up or being walked up upon.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, Mark. Good chatting with you. Very quickly, we have a comment here from someone. Hopita, what do you mean she want to bring God into it? The lady believes in God. That's her view, and brass tacks is a free and frank exchange of views. That the woman expressed herself. She's of another faith or belief system, and she's afforded the same privilege. And I agree entirely. My intention was not to stop her from expressing her view. My intention was to expose a contradiction that is inherent whenever anyone talks about God stopping something or exercising an option. The question is, why was that option not exercised in the first place? And that was all I was trying to bring to her. But certainly, I think that her belief system is entirely her business. She's entirely entitled to have those beliefs. This has been Down to Brass Tacks. We are on 52 minutes past the hour of 11, and we go now to the regional roundup. We come back to you in about 10 minutes, and we continue with more. So do stay with us. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Remember, we run until 1 o'clock today, so we continue now until the latest, which comes at 12:30. Have a couple of interesting WhatsApp messages to read. One of them says, "Peter, it's fascinating that God held back the rain to allow 13 people to escape, but He didn't seem to hold back the earthquake that killed 30,000 people in Haiti." The other WhatsApper says, "Peter, tell that caller that Christianity was designed by Europeans to control women during the Dark Ages. It was taken from the Middle Eastern cultures and used by Europeans. They then made use of it to control Africans during and after slavery. Christianity would keep us all in mental bondage if we subscribe to its principles. Christianity and Christians presume that they are the moral authority for everyone, so your neighbors will hear you arguing with your spouse and believe that they can intervene. A slave will report that group of slaves that are planning to escape. It worked then and in more modern times, but people are more educated and don't believe that kind of ideology like they once did. All religions actually try to control the masses, but Islam and Christianity certainly are chief among them." Another quick WhatsApp message about smoking marijuana, and the individual is arguing it is dangerous to one's health. For some people, the long-term effect and its usage should not be encouraged, since some people will abuse the drug knowingly and unknowingly. You can get a hangover from alcohol, and you can get high from psychotic marijuana abuse, where the effect is more unstable than alcohol, since there are many other food items that can neutralize the drug in the human body, like soda water. I'm not reading this anymore. I think go straight to the calls. Down to brass tacks. Good afternoon. Yes, good afternoon and welcome. Good afternoon and welcome.
Peter.
Yes, sir. How are you going?
Good afternoon. I'm all right.
Good to hear you.
This thing I'd like to mention to you.
Sure.
Two things, actually. The first one is just about the weird thing, which is when I was at work, two passengers that came in to join a cruise ship, they flew in from Canada. And they told me that they were flying over the Sargasso Sea beach for about an hour and a half. And all the time they were looking down at it, and they thought they were over a pasture. And for an hour and a half, they were flying over the seaweed. So that tells you how much seaweed is out there. Mm-hmm. And a plane travels at 650 miles an hour. And if you're flying past that for an hour and a half at 650 miles speed, you can imagine how much seaweed out there. Mm-hmm. I don't really know if there's anything we can do to it, except that, like, don't brand them where, from the rocks there by Mount Gear to just south of Wazers, they got this fella and a group of people that keep that beach immaculate, in a very immaculate condition, and no moss or anything about there to take it as a little piece, kind of take it up. But anyway, Peter, what I really called to tell you is this. The district hospital in St. Lucie, the old people's hospital in St. Lucie, when it got bad weather or the rainfall a lot, they moved those people from down there and take them to the geriatric hospital in Becker's Road.
There's
a fact. Mm-hmm. They moved them from down there to St. Philip and the geriatric hospital in Becker's Road. Another one that I can't remember the name of it right now. And then when conditions improved, they take them back down there.
Right.
And there's only 37. The question is, why can't they move them from down there one time and then develop down there into something different, maybe a daycare center or...
They have facilities elsewhere to permanently house these people?
Well, Peter, I just told you when they got bad weather or the rain will fall.
Yeah, but that's short-term, but they have long-term facilities?
Yeah, but if the facilities can accommodate them short-term, then you should make it possible for the facilities to accommodate them on a permanent basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they really should do better. They haven't to be moving around these people from place to place when the rain is going to fall or when the rain is falling or when they're expecting bad weather. I think they should move them permanently and put them in much better conditions at the district hospital in St. Philip, the one in Becker's Road. And there's another one, like, the name ain't coming to my tongue right now. And I just thought that it'd be a good idea to just house them permanently at these other hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
I use them in St. Lucie for something else. Let turn it into a recreation center for the people down there in Holt Road and River Bay, and because the building was refurbished and painted up, and it's really lovely. The building, you know the building you're talking about?
I'm not really sure I know the building, but the problem you're raising is a reasonable one. It's just a question, I think, of long-term facilities being made available. You know?
Yeah, and you got to treat the old folk with
of
a
course,
lot of respect.
But the problem, of course, is always that they may not necessarily be long-term facilities, but I suspect that where they are available, they will be able to make use of them.
Yeah, right? But the other thing I want to mention to you very quickly, though, Peter.
You tell me it's two things.
This is a quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to do with the old folk again, because I love old people and I like to talk with old people. So when I go to speak for them, I will. We had from that store that used to always bring a lot of the tourists, take them to Elar Court and fet them.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that he see coming here on a regular basis for a lot of years.
You know, that was something that several successive prime ministers have done.
Right. I want to know if Prime Minister the Honourable Miyamoto is going to do that as well. And if she's going to do that, I would have no problem with it. But what I would also want to see incorporated in that kind of thinking is that the old folk of this country, 75 years and upwards, are taken to this place and fed it, because those persons are the ones that work hard to make this country what it is, so that you and I and others could enjoy this country to its fullest. And I would like to see those people recognized, and I would like to see those people taken to Elara Court and feted, and that, for me, would be a good thing.
I hope that I can get to go to at some stage and be feted. Not that I get old, but, you know, get to go to Elara Court and be feted. All right? Thanks a lot for calling. Good talking to you, sir. Dr. Brass, that's good afternoon.